Welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham, and once again, I am bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved in punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. Today on the show, skateboarding legend, Jeff Rowley. More on that in a second. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to DamienAbraham.com. There's an email address there you can reach me at. You can also hit me up on various forms of social media at LeftForDamien. You can also go over to Facebook.com and you can like the Turned Out of Punk Facebook page. It's run by my brother, Tristan Abraham. We post stuff about the show there. If you use Facebook, I don't, but a lot of people do. I understand it's a cool thing to kind of check out, post things that get sent into the show. You can also go over and go to Tumblr.com and you go to turnoutofpunk.tumblr.com and check out sort of the same stuff that gets posted over there on the Tumblr site as well. You can also, if you want to support this show, go over to iTunes and subscribe to this if you use iTunes and write a review and rate it. And you can also just tell your friends if you don't use iTunes. That's a great way to support the show. But if you do use iTunes, you will find on that stream, there's also a couple other podcasts that come up in the Turned Out of Punk family. And we're going to be adding more and taking some out of that stream and giving them their own streams. And oh my gosh, tons of stuff is happening in the Turned Out of Punk world in the near future. More on that in a second as well. But you will see that there's a show out there called Turned Out of Punk Footnotes, which is hosted by myself and my good friend and your good friend, Chris O'Toole. And each week he and I dissect a Turned Out of Punk episode and kind of dive into the nooks and the crannies of everything and talk about some of the nerdier stuff we could always talk about these episodes. It's a fun podcast. And it also has a very active mailbag. So if you have questions or anything, you can send them into that show as well. And I think that's it. You know, that's, I think, it for right now as far as to talk about before we go on to... Oh, I guess we should talk about the other podcasts. Yeah. Okay, other podcasts in the Turned Out of Punk family include Clobbering Time, which is hosted by myself and Tom Bryan. We have a new episode coming soon. We're just waiting on a big guest to get back to us. So we might have some other ones coming up in the interim because it's taken a while to get to that episode. So, you know, we've got some stuff planned for that one. And there's also Oil and Flowers or Oils and Flowers. I think we're still trying to figure it out which one. And that is hosted by myself and my friend DJ Buddha Blaze. And each week we're going to talk about weed on that show. We're also going to have guests on that show, but we're going to be talking about weed. So that's going to be coming up soon. So if you don't like weed, do not click on that one. But if you do like weed, definitely click on that podcast and check it out. That is it for this podcast stuff to talk about. Now on to Turned Out of Punk other business, which includes Turned Out of Punk has its first ever live appearance coming up. That's right. Turned Out of Punk is going to be appearing as part of the Sound on Sound Festival in Austin, Texas. And this is a festival put on by the good people that did the Fun Festival. And I think they've now just kind of gone out and done their own thing, you know, and it's amazing. It's always like an incredible, you know, a list of bands that, you know, like, where else will you see Young Thug play with Youth of Today? Where else would you get to see Turned Out of Punk live? That's right. We're going to be appearing on the comedy stage and podcast stage that they have set up. They're also going to be, Tim Heidecker's going to be there. Todd Barry's going to be there. There's going to be lots of other stuff. And the bands that are playing, you know, Explosions in the Sky, Run the Jewels, Descendants, Purity Ring, Death Grips, Young Thug, Thursday, Mac DeMarco, Courtney Burnett, Wale, Flag, God, there's so much stuff, tons of stuff that I want to get to. Oh, Dead Milkman. Oh my gosh, there's tons of people I would love to have on the show. Touche Amore, Bob Mould, Dillinger Escape. There's a lot of people. It's going to be a fun thing. So if you are in the Austin, Texas area on the weekend of November 4th, 5th, and 6th, you want to go over to Sherwood Forest and check that out. It is going to be a fun time, and I'm going to be doing this live. Probably much more organized than I'm doing this right now with this podcast, because I am running out the door to go play shows, and I've been running all over the place doing other things. It's been a hectic fall, but it has not stopped me from having, I gotta say, one of the coolest runs of guests that I've ever been on, and it's not gonna stop, because this week on the show, we have a very, very you know, influential person in a lot of people's lives, you know, Jeff Rally, you know, not just people that are fans of skateboarding, where he is a legend, a legitimate legend, but also people, you know, like myself that played video games, you know, you know, people are laughing about that right now, but don't underestimate the power of playing a video game. Antoine talked about the influence of that soundtrack. I love those soundtracks in the Tony Hawk games. Granted, you know, I'd heard like Adolescence and stuff prior to that, but like getting to hear them in that context and playing video games, you know, playing Jeff Rowley's character in a video game. I don't know. Those are you know, key moments of when I should have been spending more time applying myself to school. But no, I was applying myself to video games. But anyway, Jeff is someone that I've gotten to meet because Fucked Up played a show that he put on a couple months ago, I guess a year ago now, in Long Beach, California, where he opened up a free skate park for local kids in the area. It was in a particularly violent area of Long Beach, and this was going to be a free kind of cool activity for kids to have access to. And, you know, they brought skateboards down, gave skateboards out to kids, and we got to play one of the most surreal shows, because we're playing in a gazebo in broad daylight in the middle of rush hour, and it was a very amazing one. And I think Lee at the time from Trash Talk had a broken ankle or leg or something crazy, but he was in a wheelchair watching the show. It did something that I will remember forever that day. But anyway, Jeff Rally was there, and it was amazing watching person after person come up to him and just be starstruck. And I'm talking about people that, you know, had been around, you know, quote unquote celebrity type people before and have been totally fine, but just be totally taken aback by being around, you know, Jeff Rally. And you know, because these people become, they're professional athletes, you know, and this is for someone who doesn't like, you know, sports, quote unquote, in the capital S way. I don't know if you consider skateboarding a sport. I think that's a really controversial thing to say among certain people in skateboarding. But, you know, these people are like superheroes. Like they're larger than life, and the stuff they can do, you know, especially for me who sucks on a skateboard, is truly godlike. So anyway, I've been working on having Jeff on the show for a while now, and finally we were able to make it happen. And I'm really grateful that I was able to do this. Now, on to something, unfortunately, kind of a bummer that I have to talk about before I get into the show today. Jeff brings up a band today on the show that is legendary to skateboarding and punk and skate rock and all that kind of stuff. They have a lead singer who actually started Thrasher Magazine. He's one of the founders of Thrasher Magazine, was the first editor there. But unfortunately, the band's name is Hate Speech. There's no other way to put it. And it doesn't end with the name. If you look into this band, they had a shtick that was racist. There's no other way to put it. And so I want to apologize for the offense that the name causes people. But I also want to say to anyone and everyone, we got to kind of look into some of these bands. And you know, some of the stuff that these bands do, we got to call them on it. You know, and this isn't meant to be something, you know, on the show. We keep it kind of light generally and things like that. But you know, this is kind of ridiculous that this stuff is still going on and that we don't really talk about it and stuff. So, you know, and for those of you who say like, oh, well, you know, it's in the past, blah, blah, blah. No, this stuff is still real. You know, look into anything to do with the current treatment of Indigenous peoples in Canada or America and sort of the racism suffered by peoples all over the world, you know, Indigenous people all over the world. So, I want to apologize again for the band's name, and I want to apologize for any offense people have taken by hearing it and stuff like that. And it's a weird one because it is something that is so tied to skateboarding history, as you'll hear, but I don't know. I just thought I should acknowledge that. So anyway, back onto today's show. Today's show is a great conversation with a incredibly influential person in skateboarding, someone who I don't necessarily share all the same opinions about of music as you'll hear on the show and stuff like that. But at the same time, someone that has had a massive influence on myself and many of my friends and many people I know, and probably many people I don't know. I'm sure many, many people I don't know. I don't know that many people in the grand scheme of things. So everyone, please sit back, relax, and enjoy Jeff Rally on Turned Out a Punk. Jeff, as we were just talking about, this has taken us so long to make happen, but that is not for lack of trying.
No, it's not for lack of trying on your end. And believe it or not, on my end, just the planets did not want to align.
No.
But they have finally touched down and landed, and we are, in fact, in the same time and space right now.
Exactly, exactly. Well, that's all that matters is the here and now, and I guess in this case, the past. So I'm going to start this off the way I start them all off, which is, how did you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you kind of ever came across the genre?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Liverpool, right? And I grew up playing soccer, playing football. Do you know what I mean? Since I was a little embryo, my dad played football like crazy. And so he played, he actually managed a team and he was semi-professional. And then when I was like, I played for like a Sunday league team called the Egbeth People's Hall. And then I played for my school team. But when I started skating, when I first started skating, the first time I saw a skateboard, I was just like kids riding down a hill at the back of this shopping center, and they were just like small plastic skateboards. But then really when I started seeing guys, from my school, a guy that had a kind of a big orange mohawk and he had like denim jacket with, you know, Iron Maiden patches on the back. And another friend of mine whose name was Gobbo, he was like just a Neanderthal looking guy. But, but I saw them walking down the street with like skateboards, and the boards were like big boards with big bright wheels and bright graphics. And I'd never seen that stuff before, but I'd also never really linked up skateboarding with punk. Like growing up punk, that wasn't in my household. But when I first started seeing skaters around, before I'd even bought a board, it was the first time I kind of saw like real punkers on the street that I knew, you know? And so I went into a skate shop in the town or a record shop called Probe Records. And I knew they sold skateboards just from word of mouth, but it was kind of like back then it was up like a kind of a dingy side street, which is now like the busiest tourist area. It's almost like a few doors away from the cavern, which it was around. Yeah. Now I think it's like some fashion store or something like that.
But it was there up until a couple of years ago, right? Like it was there until recently.
Well, it's moved a bunch of times. It's still there. It's actually Probe Records in Liverpool is still there.
Awesome.
But when I went into the shop, that was the first time I would say I was really exposed to just punk music and punk artwork and just the sound of it all and the smell of it too. Punk has generally been fairly smelly. And I think that's probably the first time I like was introduced to punk music or heard it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of like, I guess when you kind of went from there, you bought, I guess, your first skateboard, and I know you've spoken about it before, they needed to have grip tape or something. You had to wait for that.
Yeah, there was like two skateboards in the record shop. There was a Skull Skates Dead Guys, which had like Elvis Presley and I think maybe Costello, I can't remember who was on the actual graphic, but they had like two boards to choose from, a couple of trucks. So I just put together basically all they had. Mismatched trucks, no grip tape, and that was it. And then my dad put the truck on the wrong way around. We had to fix that, and that was my first Christmas present. So then we started it. Every time I'd go into the city to skate, this was like shortly after I started skating, I would always go to Probe Records because that they had the skate stuff, so they'd always get new stuff in there. And I'd always go into the counter and look at the stickers and look at whatever was in there just because I was into it. So we would skate outside the front of Probe and piss the guy off and skate the banks down the side of the building, which, like I said, at that time, it was really run down in the city. So there was just poop everywhere. And kind of like that kind of area, which is now the busiest area in Liverpool, was essentially just dead waste ground, you know, and a couple of pubs and bars down the side street. So you'd get like a drunken guy come and pass. But so that's kind of, you know, at that point, then, you know, from there on out, like I saw more and more and more of it. And the guys I would see in the city, I didn't know anybody that skated other than, you know, one or two guys that lived near me. So when we'd go to Probe in there, I met a load of guys or saw a load of guys skate that I didn't know and that were from a different part of the city. And some of those guys were heavily into punk music. So I was exposed as a little kid to that. You know, it wasn't something I grew up in. I didn't grow up in like a punk family. I mean, my dad was this your classic kind of middle class hardworking dude that he liked rock and roll. You know, he liked the Moody Blues and Zeppelin and that kind of stuff. And same with my mother. Actually, my mother liked country music, so she'd listen to like a lot of Johnny Cash and that kind of stuff in the house. So those were, that's really what I was influenced by. And then, you know, my sister was a dancer, so she was just straight up like 80s Madonna mayhem in the house, just dancing around. And but it was that, and it was the skate videos, really. Like, I mean, when you first start skating, it's everything, right? Like,
yeah,
you soak it up like a sponge, you know, the graphics, the artwork, like so much effort goes into skateboard graphics. Think about like how much hand-drawn artwork went into those early graphics. And
oh, and the layers of screening required to get kind of those colors on it as well. Oh, yeah. And all that kind of, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, cutting all the ruby liths for every one of those graphics. But as a kid, that was what really, you know, the punk music was part and parcel of that. Like, that was skate music at that time. And so that's how I got exposed to it, through watching skate videos and then going, who was that? You know, who's singing right now? He looks, sounds like he's going to rip the wall down and he's going to slash it with a grind too. So that's how it kind of started. And, you know, so friends of mine would give me, a friend of mine called Martin, he would always try to get me to, you know, listen to whatever it was, the Descendants and Black Flag and Minor Threat and like those kinds of, that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And then all kind of like the mayhem punk, but I didn't know half of what I was listening to. So, and I didn't know how to access that, and I didn't have a record player at first. And so it was all new to me. It was just all like a really trippy new sound. And it wasn't until really a few years after I started skating where I really actually started to sit down and listen to the music, you know, and read the lyrics and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Like, but when you were, because you're obviously too young to have probably been through or remembered like sort of the Pistol sphere, but were you like catching any of like just sort of these like little blips on like Top of the Pops when like these bands would be there as a young kid? Like, when you kind of met these punks, did you have any sort of preconceptions about what it was going to be like? Cause it just seems like, at least in North America, I can kind of remember it being kind of like, you know, something that was like presented in a, oh, you should be afraid of this thing.
Yeah, it was there, but we lived in a big city pretty much and hung out on the streets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like that, absolutely.
So us seeing that stuff was just a reflection of what was going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm 40 years old now, so you know, in 1984 I was 8 years old, you know, and so that was like at the tail end of like a lot of like the Pistol mayhem. Oh, yeah. So, but it was still alive and kicking, you know, and it was not like that kind of music that went through a phase and then it was gone. It reverberated and it had a massive effect on, I think, a lot of things, you know. I think it had a huge effect on artwork. I think it had a huge, you know, blatantly huge effect on youth culture, on the fact that youth actually has a voice and it's important to listen to. I think punk, you know, was very much that. And you learn a little bit of that when you start reading the lyrics, though, right? And you start understanding what a lot of the music's about. It's not all just smash them up and go. There is some genuine, extremely, you know, a great amount of talented writers coming from that era. But I did see like Motorhead and Sex Pistols on television growing up, absolutely. And I did see that exact same thing on the streets. You know, I seen, you know, guys walking down the street in full denim and leathers, smashing things, you know, that kind of mayhem. And, you know, I grew up on like a council estate in Liverpool, and that's been knocked down now. So there was a lot of like high rise flats all around. So that kind of like vision of kind of suburbia that's half crumbled down, half wasteland, half like bombed out buildings and just derelict everywhere, and, you know, and drunks on the streets and mayhem. And I mean, honestly, I mean, I had a great upbringing, but I grew up in that.
Yeah.
I grew up right in that. I grew up like looking through waste grounds of broken down buildings and playing in that kind of stuff. So the music, like, when I first started listening to it, when I started to grow up, you know, when you're 12, 13, 14 years old, you're not really quite. Some guys are and some guys aren't. I wasn't really ready to sit down and listen to music. I was too interested in skating. Mm-hmm. on balance with it, but the music was very much a part that drove me to want to skate a lot. And I would like hum the music as it was skating down the street, mm-hmm. you know, and then you find out it's, you know, on Black Flag. And so it kind of, you know, kind of went from there. And,
absolutely. When you kind of got, when you got into it, do you remember the first show you ever went to? Like, do you remember the first concert that you would go to ultimately?
I couldn't get into it. Like, the planet was long gone. I was so small when I used to skate out around the side of that. And that was, like, that was really close to the first real skate shop in Liverpool, which was called Off the Wall. Mm-hmm. And that was ran by a pro skater named Neil Danz. And he opened it up in a really old building in Liverpool called Quiggins. And the Probe and Quiggins building is still there, although the guy who used to own it isn't involved with it anymore. But around the corner from that was where the Planet was. Mm-hmm. Now, I would hear about guys going in the Planet, and I would be skating out, and people would say, come, let's go in there. But I was so little, I'd already tried to get in bars before and got, like, kicked out.
Yeah.
So I was terrified to go into like a punk bar with like at 12 years old. Now, if I sent you a picture of what I looked at like at that age, you would think I was like six.
Yeah.
I was a little kid. I didn't really, my balls didn't really drop until I was like about 15, like kind of a little bit later than, you know, 12 to 18 months later than like most of the other guys.
Yeah.
So I was pretty sensitive at that age. You know what I mean? Like I knew I was a little sensitive, he says. Yeah, you say that to one of my friends growing up, they probably said I was a little shit, you know, but a little shit that was sensitive, and that's possible. So I would skate around the side of it, you know, like there was like curbs and stuff around the side that we would skate. So I never got to see any of that music before I really moved over here. And I'll be honest with you, I don't remember. Like, the first show I remember going to was over here. I don't remember going to any music stuff before I moved to the States. So I couldn't honestly, I remember the first CD I had.
Yeah, was that?
You know, because I don't know if there was CDs when I moved to the States even. It might have still been tapes.
When you moved, was 94 you moved to America?
94, yeah.
Yeah, so it would have, yeah, been like the turnover to the CD era was kind of like, it was kind of...
The first CD I bought when I was over here was Sex Pistols, Nevermind the Bollocks. I do know that.
Yeah.
I remember that, because prior to that, I didn't even have any means of playing CDs. I had tapes. I remember I brought tapes over from England with me that were just mixed tapes. I had some albums. I think I had a Black Flag album. The first 4 years, I think.
Yeah.
And then I had a mixtape of all this, just a mixture of, you know, all that kind of like skate rock stuff, and mixed with, you know, kind of West Coast kind of hardcore music, like, all, you know, whatever genre you would fit it in, like Minutemen, Descendants, all, you know, Black Flag, that whole thing. So I had a lot of that stuff on tapes. Mm-hmm. And then the first real shows I started to go to out here were all that kind of, you know, that kind of stuff, like Fugazi and, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I saw those play a bunch of times out here. But prior to moving to the US, like I said, I skated more than I did anything.
Were you aware of like those, like, because I know, didn't you, was that the skate shop that English Robbie or Robbie?
What's that?
Was that where Robbie from Jail Cell Recipes worked?
Robbie worked in the skate shop after that called Split.
Okay.
Split Skates, which was a Manchester shop, but they had one in Liverpool too.
Okay.
And that was a little further up the street from where the Planet was and from where Off the Wall was. Off the Wall went, and then Split became, if I remember. I can't, it's hard to remember when I was 12 years old. Absolutely. But I was surrounded by all that stuff. I'd be in the skate shop and those guys would be going to, you know, play a gig, or they'd be playing music in there that was just raw hardcore.
Yeah.
All the time, you know, and they'd make fun of us because we were little kids coming in the shop, Robbie would, because we weren't doing the coolest stuff, and we weren't, you know, bowing down to Philly and you know, some of the skaters like that they were into, like Ricky Windsor and those kinds of skaters.
Yeah.
But that's only because we didn't freaking know. We didn't even have a minute to digest any of it yet because we were embryos. But I was always around all that, and everyone that was in that skate shop was always buying records because it was in a kind of an older building with all these other stores, and it was like record stores in there, like LP.
Collecting. Oh, did they tear that thing down? Was it like a big like shopping center type thing, kind of?
There's been a few, like the few skate shops that's been in the city, they've kind of bounced around and they've been in different like old buildings in there, but they all have a similar dynamic, that kind of hippie, like joss stick kind of smell. Yeah. When you walk in and there's, yeah, you go up two flights of stairs and the stairs are like super steep and wore out old wooden stairs, and you'd get to one level and there was four stores up there. One of them sold like Dr. Martens and the other one sold like really bad kind of vintage, just junk, you know, and then there was the skate shop.
Yeah.
But there's been a few skate shops. I mean, Probe sold boards originally, and then before that there was actually a mountain sports store called Ellis Brigham that, mm-hmm, sold some of the first skateboard stuff in Liverpool, if I do remember.
So was skateboarding, yeah, when did skateboarding really hit England? At the same time in America, was it big in like sort of the 60s at the first point and then kind of came back again later on?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, Tony Alver and guys from that area would be able to tell you a little bit clearer, because I know Tony came to Liverpool really early on, mm-hmm, very, very, very long time ago. And there was a lot of skate parks in our area. But by the time I started skating, a lot of them were like broken down, mm-hmm, just remnants of what was left of a crazy old some skate park design that somebody conjured up in their head. You know, they were generally like the roughest concrete you could ever possibly imagine. Why would you ever build a kid's park made out of that stuff, kind of thing? You fell once and you suffered for months, you know, mm-hmm, on them. So when we first started going to parks in the city, they were all broken down, so they were half filled in, or, you know, but so we had a lot of pretty interesting, that, you know, skate parks in the area if we had the chance to get to them. And we also, what was cool about Liverpool is like location wise, we had guys like, you know, Howard Cook and Adam Cook that were on the other side of the water in Wallasey, which is across the other side of the River Mersey. If you look at a map of Liverpool, you go across the directly from the city centre, across the water, and you take the ferry across the Mersey.
Yeah, the Voorhees played on that ferry one time.
Yeah, yes, it's amazing, as long as it's as long as it's not all over the place raining.
Yeah, they, I can't believe they do shows on that city ferry. Like, I don't know, they still do it, obviously.
I don't think they still do it. You can also rig it up, though.
That's so amazing.
I think it would be amazing to do a show in the night.
Oh my awesome. God, yeah.
So we had different people we were influenced. Like, we had a lot of different people from different areas that skated that would bring in their kind of music style or their skate style. And it was all hand in hand, you know, like, we all skated together. All the guys that were into punk and hardcore and whatever music anyone was into, there was no issues in Liverpool with that. There was never like, oh, you're wearing baggy pants, oh, you've got dreads, oh, you're listening to punk and you're listening to reggae. Like, it was, no one really, honestly, really give a shit, as long as everyone was down to skate. And that was what was rad about Liverpool, is everyone was always down to skate.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was always out skating. It was never like, that was what we were doing. We loved it. Like, and that was apparent. And I think that's one thing a lot of the Liverpool skaters and the guys who were in bands in Liverpool took with them, is that We did it, you know what I mean? We were into it big time, and I don't think every area kind of had that kind of dedication to it. So we always knew, like, you know, Robbie and everybody was in a band, but I never saw him play, you know.
Yeah, no, I they're one of those bands that I wish I had seen live, and even video footage of them is not that easy to find, you know. And they're, yeah, they took Youth of the Day, I think, on. Well, they were opening for Youth of the Day on that first tour, I think, over, yeah, there. But that would have been something special to see. But also,
well, have you tried to get a hold of Robbie? He's around.
Oh, I know. Oh my God, I've stayed at Robbie's, yeah, house. Robbie,
have
is
you?
Oh yeah, Robbie is a friend. Absolutely,
yeah.
I love that guy.
Fred.
Punish him about jail cell recipes every time I see him. It's Liverpool. Yeah. Like, from, that's the first place we ever played, was in one of those giant things that you were describing when we went to the UK for the first time in the band.
Was it one of Foxy's gigs?
No, it was booked by another guy who was awesome, and he gave us jacket potatoes to eat. But Foxy was out of town on a skateboarding trip. So, and that's what leads into my next point I wanted to bring up. So no one was at the show. No one was there. And
that's unusual because Liverpool usually gets a pretty good turnout. Well, that's the thing. Everyone
was away because it was like a big skateboarding thing that everyone went out of town for. And that's because, I guess, you know, you say like you don't have to be punk to be in a skateboarding in Liverpool, but it seems like a lot of the punks that I've met there were skateboarders. Like I'd say the majority of punks that I met are into skateboarding. And that goes right to this day with like my friend, like Russ and stuff like that, who are like, all these people are still skating, you know? And it's really, and I don't know, maybe like I haven't been involved in the right punk scene in London or to see it as much, but you don't really see it in the rest of the UK in the same way that you do in Liverpool.
No, I've seen. No, I don't think you do. But I don't know if you see as many of the older guys still skating like you do in Liverpool. Whether the thing, you don't see them a lot in Liverpool, but they do skate. You know, there is. I mean, I have a good friend who's one of the older skaters in Liverpool. His name's Fez, and he's in his 50s. And
I think I met Fez with Foxy actually.
Yeah, probably. And he still skates. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Not when anyone's around, and everyone in the city probably thinks he doesn't, but yes, he does. He still goes to Tesco supermarket and hits the curbs up, you know, puts on his Deep Purple to get hyped and then heads over there.
That would make sense. Like, just like, it seems like the fact that there is such a populace of skateboarding people that they would still be skating.
But it's also a music culture, like the city center in Liverpool is pretty amazing. And it's the location of it right on the water. It's beautiful. And so it had lots of space to put on shows and those kinds of things. So it's always had that kind of like scene. But it's always had a pretty rad, kind of bar scene too, like the characters in Liverpool are very much willing to communicate with anyone from out of the city and have a laugh, like a good sense of humor, good sense of camaraderie. And I think that definitely nurtures music, you know, those kinds of environments where you have an old fella in the pub sitting in the corner and you can have a laugh with him. And maybe he went and saw the Beatles. Do you know what I'm saying? And you can have that conversation with him. It's always been a very much a music oriented culture. But if you look at like the location of Liverpool, it has like influx of people coming from just north of there, like Southport, you know, and you can go northeast of there and then you're in Manchester or that whole area. Those kind of influences coming from those areas into Liverpool. And then, you know, you can get a boat to Ireland from there, or you can go right across the water and be in Wallasey in North Wales. And all those different people go into the city of Liverpool regularly to get their stuff, you know, or if they need to go into a big city for whatever reason. So you get it. And it has a lot of universities and stuff too, a lot of big universities, and a lot of the city culture and a lot of the old history of the city is right in the city center. You know, you have two big churches right in the city center and a big old port with those old warehouse spaces and everything. You know, you have that influx of students and you have that bar culture and you have that character, and it's going to breed good and bad, and that can come out of music. And, you know, Liverpool's an area that doesn't have, has had great musicians come out of it that aren't just from one genre. From lots of different genres. And it's not a big city. It's small. Population-wise, it's not one of the biggest cities in the country. But from historically and from just a cultural standpoint, it's one of the most important. You know, and the more you look into the city, the more that becomes apparent, you know.
No, I was going to say, it seems like more sense of civic pride than any other few cities I find, too. Like, everyone you know, I've met from Liverpool knows like a ton about the history, you know, and like, I guess, you know, like, or we'll talk about Boys from the Black stuff make reference to like, you know, like it just knows about kind of like the importance of that place. So you kind of talked earlier about skateboard videos, and that was so important for exposing you to music. Do you remember the first one of those you bought?
Savannah Slammer.
Okay.
Savannah Slammer in Savannah, Georgia. That was a Thrasher video, but I bought it from my friend who I mentioned a little earlier. That was a Neanderthal looking skater named Gobbo.
Yeah.
And that he would always wear like a denim jacket with a big overkill patch on the back. But he was the only guy I'd heard that somebody had a skate video, and he was the only guy that had it. And I eventually got a hold of him. He's like, "Yeah, I have it. It's in someone's house. You want to buy it?" And I skated with him from one guy's house to another guy's house. And, you know, was waiting there for hours. Eventually someone comes down with a tape, hands it to him. I gave him some money and I took it home and watched it. And it turns out years later, he sold me like half of the video. But it was a VHS. It was a VHS copy of a VHS copy of a copy that was filmed out of someone's ass. And I watched it, and it was years later before I realized, like I said, it was only half the video. So I only knew it as like what I was watching. It would, towards the end, it would just crackle, 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 and then it would go off and it would go into like an episode of EastEnders or something like that he taped over. But yeah, it was Savannah Slammer, and if you watch that video, I think it was Savannah Slammer. I'm not sure if it was the second one. Well, the third one, I can never remember.
Yeah.
But it was the one that had all of the Stessic artwork over it, and it was all Drunk Injun's music all the way through, most of it. And it had all those short clips of all of those characters that I'd never been exposed to, you know, Eric Dressen and Scott Oster and Tommy Guerrero and Lance Mountain and all of those. And I was actually, believe it or not, I was watching it last night.
Oh, wow.
And I was watching Bill Downforce running it, because I'm watching Bill Downforce running it. I'm looking at it going, this is just incredible. I want to skate like this right now. Like, let me have some of this energy. But if you watch that video and you watch the full runs that guys had, man, they were like hyper powerful then. Like they skated pretty big obstacles and pushed on the flat ground to get the speed for them in that video. And it was pretty amazing. So I watched that video, and that's the first time I saw tricks, you know?
Yeah.
The only tricks I knew were what I was seeing a couple of friends doing, and it was basically just ollies and axle stalls and stuff like that. And when I watched that video, it blew me away, and the music was so energy driven. It was so in tune with what was going on the board, that I would have to say that, like, that, you know, from a music standpoint, it was really what got me hooked on skateboarding, mm-hmm. you know, and that was Mofo, the Drunk Injuns,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, Mofo was the original editor for Thrasher magazine.
Yeah.
So he was responsible for a lot of like the thrash, you know, that we take for granted in the word thrasher, you know, he very much brought the balls to that whole program and put it in the mag.
And the current editor is like an old Boston hardcore guy too.
Yeah. And so they made that music for that kind of thing. Really, they were just, if you ask Mofo, he'll just tell you he just did what was in front of him and just kind of just went for it a little. But he's a great singer. Oh, smoke, is he a good singer? And that was something that, you know, years later you do give thanks for that. Like, wow, like they were good too. They were talented, you know, what they were doing. And so it stands the test of time. And I find a lot of music doesn't. And a lot of the early skate music and a lot of hardcore for me stands the test of time, mm-hmm. you know? And that was it, really. Like, that's what I liked, and that's why I liked Motorhead so much, is because Lemmy was, his writing was, I understood it, and I felt it, and he was very much speaking in a way that I wish I could express myself. And the first time I met him, he used to go and see the Beatles play, and he used to take a train from North Wales across to Liverpool and get off on Lime Street Station and walk all the way over to where he probably walked right. In fact, he without a doubt walked right past where Probe Records was a few doors up, and would go into the cavern and places there and watch. And so he told me, like, really the first time I met him, like he said, John Lennon was about as punk as it gets. He said he just wouldn't take any shit from anybody in the crowd. You know, anyone messes with him, he just whack him. You know, basically with his instruments,
yeah,
and everything. And it was Lemmy took that. He took all of that character from a lot of different places and put it into his music. And so I don't know, Liverpool has affected a lot of people in a lot of creative ways. And I'm thankful that I grew up in the city. It's an amazing place.
It's funny because like you think of John Lennon and it's, you know, you brought him up at those shows having to deal with the audience. It's like, yeah, Liverpool, you know, it's an amazing place, but it is a hard city. And especially at that point, it would have been, you know.
Oh, in the 60s? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was very industrial, too, because it was a port town. I mean, my granddads, one of them was in the war, you know, he was in the military. Mm-hmm. And he was pretty much just shell-shocked when he got back, you know, seeing his best friend's throat slit right in front of him and blood splattering all over him. And my other granddad was a ship fitter in the docks in Liverpool. And so Liverpool is a very, very tough place for a number of reasons. It was tough because you had to be tough to feed your family, I think, and very middle class. And so come the weekend, including for us when we would skate, it was get all that out, you know, because the rest of the week you're fighting uphill mm-hmm. a little. Yeah, you know, and it's got a little bit better in the city. It's not quite as bad in the city center area as it used to be. Well, it's nowhere near as bad as it used to be because there's cameras everywhere now. But it's still rough and tumble, Ethel. Yeah. You know, it's still rough and tumble.
Well, you mentioned you having to get a bootleg video, and I guess were they doing them in Region 1 at that point? Like, were they doing skate videos?
No idea. Yeah, like, no, I have no idea.
It was like a bootleg circuit, I bet.
God knows how it was recorded, and, you know, and then I saw Wheels on Fire, which was a little softer, right?
Yeah.
Like listening, still going from like the Drunk Engine to then watching a Santa Cruz video with all the Descendants music in there, which is very, very catchy, isn't it? Like Descendants is very, very kind of catchy music.
And oh, absolutely.
Kind of a drawn out punk, not quite as fast or not quite as explosive aggression or anything. So I was exposed to that. And then, so I started listening to that music from that. So really the skate side of it for me, if it was in a skate video and the stuff that I remembered, I pursued it musically. I did have a record collection for quite a while, a lot of East Coast hardcore, and I had every one of the Dinosaur Jr. albums on first press and stuff like that, but my brain has been, I banged my head so many times now I couldn't remember half of what I had, probably. but I have always liked that genre of music. I mean, some of my favorite bands, my favorite band that I can listen to any time is Lungfish. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a massive Higgs fan, and I can listen to any of their albums any day of the week, however I'm feeling, and I love hearing it. And I don't find that with a lot of music. I find that his music is so. I don't even know if you could even attempt to put it into any kind of bubble other than it's unique. It's unique. Mm-hmm. And it's very much creative and open and doesn't close doors in your head. It creates inspiration for me. And then I like the slow and steady drone of a lot of the Lungfish kind of sound and the way that he expresses those, you know, hits those high points with his singing. And I only got to see him play once. I saw him in Washington, D.C. With Ed Templeton and when that was early 90s, late 90s. Then if I came here in 94, it would have been, I don't know, 90s, 96, 97, 98, somewhere in there. I saw them. And you know.
You talked about going to see Fugazi earlier you know, seeing Lungfish. What was like kind of the DC, where was that coming to you from? Like, where were you getting into that music from?
Well, Fugazi and the Minor Threats, I knew that music, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, through natural progression of listening to some of the other stuff or hearing stuff on videos, skate videos that came after that.
Yeah.
And then also from exploring music in those genres, you come to that pretty quick. But then when I moved here from, you know, 94, the first six, seven, eight years, I spent a lot of time with Ed Templeton. And so I was exposed to a lot of new music through him. And so I explored more of the Discord sound than I had done before. Through liking a lot of like Fugazi and expanding into Lungfish, and then looking at some of the maybe the less known Discord bands like Grey Matter and Dag Nasty and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I love all that stuff now. Even now I can listen to it. It doesn't sound like it's kids singing. It doesn't sound like it's dated. It sounds very much genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. And I still find tracks, you know, with those bands that, you know, the more I listen to it, I listen to some of those songs differently and find new, you know, new inspiration in them, or find out that some tracks that maybe I didn't really give as much time, now I'm really like opening up to,
mm-hmm.
You know, and so I'm still exploring that. I mean, I'd love to hear younger bands like that taking those kinds of sounds and really turning it into something more current, you know, and we're ready for that. We're ready for sort of like a whole new music genre explosion that, I don't know, comes from a place of education. I think kids need that now. You want to start a band? But we're too old.
No, well, let me tell you, if I'm too old, I'm in a lot of trouble. Well, it's funny because, like, you know, DC.
So am I, as a skateboarder at 40. Yeah. But it doesn't. Who cares? It's the creative doors, if they're open and you're progressing, then keep them open.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, DC does have like a great. They've got a new wave of DC hardcore.
Do they?
Is the they're calling it? And there's like a lot of cool bands kind of coming out there right now.
I need to hear some of that.
Yeah, and there's like, and also like hip hop wise, there's like a lot of people doing like Kendrick Lamar, like doing. There's like a real rap progression too, like yeah. Lyrically. Like, I think that's the thing is we're.
Oh,
coming.
I know. I'm not turning down that, but that's not. It just has no bearing to my upbringing.
Yeah. It's just not know? Sonically so what you want to hear.
Yes, but I respect it, and I like a lot of the younger hip hop guys. I like all of those Tyler and all those guys. Is what they're doing. I like the fact that they're just going and doing their thing, and it's real, and they're into it, and that's amazing. And it's genuinely pretty positive too. You know, it's not a negative. I'm gonna kill someone. I've got a nice check out my bitch on my arm right here. She's got big tits. Check this out. It's a little more. There's a little more to it than that. And that progression's great to see. I just wish we'd see more punk hardcore influenced music. That's more people are seeing, like what they saw with the Sex Pistols. People saw the Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
They're on television. They're all over the place, and they weren't watering down their music to get on there. They were doing it just out of sheer just balls, and they were hitting it right on the dot culturally at that time. And the world drives me nuts right now. Like if I was, you know, 16 years old. You know, and had the willpower to go down that route and start a band, man, it'd be a great time to do that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that you could just raise hell over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean.
Well, yeah, no, definitely. I think this is a point where you're, you know, it's like if it didn't feel like 1975, 76 or 1985 or 84, yeah. I don't know what it feels like then. But like Sex Pistols were such a confluence of time and space. Like, I don't know. I just couldn't imagine something like that happening again, taking hold, you know, in the same way that it did. Right. Like it just,
no, well, it never does. It's never the same. Right. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, when the Beatles came in and, you know, when, and then, you know, you had, Sabbath and Zeppelin and all of that kind of stuff coming. They like I said, musically they were refreshing, and but you still it was visible. You know, I find a lot of like, you know, the hardcore music that I listen to for out of choice from the musicians, they didn't want it to be like that. They wanted it to just, you needed to find it, and if you liked it, then you needed to listen to it, but they weren't going to commercialize it or cross water down their music to appeal to a broader spectrum. And I can relate to that completely. I mean, I feel a similar way about that with skateboarding, where it's a fine line. You're always running the edge. And you know, I've been, you know, ridden for some bigger companies now and over the time that I've been a skateboarder, and then I'll tell you, at times it has been difficult to go, I don't really want to have my face on that. But then sometimes you make the informed decision, because if somebody doesn't do some of that, then it's going to be worse. And that, like, I find that a lot. I mean, that I do the Street League commentary stuff because I love skateboarding. It's easy for me to talk about skateboarding, and I'm comfortable people hearing me talking about skateboarding. And that's why I do it. I do it because I like and enjoy doing it. But if it was a different circumstance, it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't work for me. And that's an example, but it has always been, and Lemmy's a good example of that. He always really commercially, he got a lot of respect from a lot of the, you know, other of his peers in the industry. And he got a lot of play and a lot of publicity from people saying that all the time, that they bowed down to him, whether it was guys like, you know, Ozzy, or whether it was, you know, Dave Grohl or somebody from the Foo Fighters, who I'm not a big fan of their music, never really have been, even though a great band. But they would tell everybody that musically Lemmy's shit, you know. But meanwhile, they were making no money off their albums, barely being able to be a band, and yet he was making music that was fantastic. You know, and that's kind of my point. It's hard. I'd like to see some of that music that I've been influenced by, that I do think has a rad energy to it and an educational backbone to it on a lot of it. I'd like to see some of that a little bit more, you know, kind of out in people's faces, because our history of our skateboarding is punk rock. Yeah, it is. So,
yeah, like there definitely seemed like there was a point, like in the 90s, where, and you were like the one like flying in the face of this, where it was like shifting away from being a punk, you know, into like just sort of like a broader music cultured thing than just being a punk sport.
Music licensing became a big issue, and that's a big, imagine like a small company that doesn't really have the resources to go and pay bunch of money to use music, because it just doesn't, and the resources it has, it puts into progressing its guys that ride for it or making a video, and that's more important. We play it silent if we can, but some of those earlier skate videos, you know, you had those guys skating, you know, you had the guys in Black Flag ingrained in like the skate culture, and Descendants and Drunk Engines, you know, you had Drunk Engines, editor of Thrasher was the singer. So you didn't see that, strangely. You didn't, from that progression from that late 80s to early 90s, and then as skateboarding started to kind of have another wave of success, which was kind of like when I moved to the US, the timing of that from like the mid-90s to the early 2000s, that was the last big wave of commercial growth in skateboarding. The music that we pumped out was a lot of music that was like a lot of classic rock, a lot of classic punk and stuff too, like that, like in the Flip videos and Baker videos and Zero videos, and to, you know, to a lesser extent in some of the Girl videos, and you know, they had more of a soul rock and roll music backbone. But and so we I think like that generation used a lot of classic music. Because we didn't have access to a lot of the younger stuff, and the younger stuff you saw was already in like your 411 videos. Like if you wanted to listen to Fugazi or, you know, any of the Discord bands or anything like that, they'd already been used in a lot of like 411 video magazines. So making our videos, when we were looking for good music, we just went straight to the classics and tried to use tracks that people didn't know about, or use bands that, you know, maybe one of the singers that was in one of the big major rock and roll bands already had a side band, so we'd look at their music and use stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or like what I did, where I tapped into a lot of like the Discord music for our first flip video, because I knew I could get rights to it, because I was friends with Ian MacKay through Ed Templeton, and through going to all those Fugazi shows. Mm-hmm. And also with being friends with Tony Alva, who was close with Ian, I was able to get Discord stuff. So I tapped into that, knowing, you know, we can put a load of Discord music in the flip videos, and we'll break it up and we can use the rights to it, and it will have that kind of connection to early skate music. And maybe it'll expose that music to people that, you know, maybe didn't know that there was other Discord bands that were equally as good as the ones that were well known.
There was a real, synergy that worked together between, like, you know, like so many people have been on this podcast have talked about how they discovered, you know, Steve McBean from Black Mountain, Pink Mountain Tops, talking about how he discovered Dinosaur Jr. through skate videos, you know, and like, there's just so much of music discovery.
It's weird you just said that, because I was just going to say, and then after that, when Flip was making its early videos, we started doing tour videos and stuff. We were looking for music to be able to use on tour videos, but we had a budget because we were doing them on a cable television network. Mm-hmm. So they gave us budgets for the show, and all had to be music, all had to be licensed and approved, and we could either use from there, go into their catalog. And I literally sat there and listened to probably freaking 1,000 CDs or something, and just went, 99.9% of them are awful, and this 1% still awful, but it's, you know. And then I'm sitting with hands in front of me going, okay, well, I know I can get, you know, all the Motorhead stuff or anything that they're friends with, you know, and I know I can get the Discord stuff, but what am I going to put on, you know, what else am I going to find? And that's when I started to look at, like, I found Black Mountain and Steve. And Steve was amazing, letting us use a lot of his music in our tour videos. Mm-hmm. Just openly and genuinely, and just enjoyed skateboarding, was stoked that his music was playing over the top of skateboarding, and I was stoked that he skated and we were using his music. He's a rad guy.
Amazing rad guy. And also, it's funny, he you know, first started going, like, he'd gotten a punk when he was like 12 years old or something crazy, like going to shows that, like, I wouldn't even imagine. Like, he's like, yeah, I had to miss Minor Threat for the first time because I was too young to go. Yeah. And so it's like, holy geez. So anyway, well, I could talk to you forever, and I haven't even started telling you about, you know, your shoes and all the stuff that I have downstairs that belong to you. But anyway, I can leave that for another time. Jeff, I just kind of want to, I guess, wrap by saying, like you kind of brought up the change in everything that happened, I guess, post the collapse of the music industry when everyone started like freaking out about licensing.
Yeah, it was very difficult. Nothing was quick and no one would get back with you. And it was right when email was really, I mean, because you got to think, like, cell phones, laptops, all that stuff, all that technology was all just coming into play all around that time. And so there was good sides to it, but then there was a lot of problems with music licensing and skate videos. And that's unfortunate. You know, that's unfortunate. Or I was good friends with the guy who makes all the music videos for The Coral, you know, that Liverpool band, The Coral.
Yeah. Him? Yeah.
And I had, like, a total in. Wrote his brothers in the band. Everything was great. They skated, and he made all their music videos, which were pretty rad. Their music videos are actually pretty cool. But my friend Kevin made those, and I still couldn't get to use their music for a big commercial over here because Sony just shut it down, even though it would have been great for the band. You know, it was a big Vans commercial that was running on MTV. They'd have been paid for it, everything properly. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get to use the music. So there's an example of very difficult. It has been very difficult to show that music that maybe should be, you know, used and exposed to people through stuff like skateboarding. But as skateboarding becomes commercial, people want money out of it. And so it's a fine line between getting a bro deal, getting someone paid, and essentially everyone's happy where the music plays over skateboarding, and kids are exposed to new music through skateboarding and through youth culture, creative youth culture.
Yeah, like, do you think it's going to change skateboarding in a way? Because, like, we've talked so much about how skateboarding's so tied to music, you know, be it...
Well, you can't play it. Like, think about it. Like, how, yeah. Like right now, let's just say we get off the phone. Like, okay, let's make a big skateboard video, whoever it's for. How do we get rights to the music? It all has to be licensed, and therefore it more than likely has to be paid for. Mm-hmm. And so you're then looking at a massive music budget, and it just doesn't justify the means. You know, it really just doesn't when you're not going to sell any DVDs, much like if you make an album, you're not going to sell, you're probably going to sell more online than you're going to sell hard copies in this day and age. But you'd know that more than me, because I don't distribute music or sell it or buy it like that. So I'm not completely up with the state of the union. But it's not much different from us making a skate video, where we spend years making creatively this new thing, and we go to put it out, and then it's on all of these rip-off sites and all over, you know, Facebook and Instagram, or people start and media things through those free social media outlets and taking all of your creative energy and just ripping it down and putting it into short clips and taking it from everywhere and trying to start a business on that. And, you know, it's hard for me to see that and think that that's a good thing, because it's creative theft, in my opinion. It'd be much like them taking your music, putting it into a mix, and making a whole website of that and just taking stuff from everywhere. You know, I don't want people to see my skateboarding from 20 years ago. It's gone. Look at it now.
Yeah. You know? Like, I guess that's the thing, is like, nothing goes away. It's here forever.
Yeah.
You know, and there's now, it's just like, there's just everything. It's just a glut.
Well, it's free. Like, people just can, like, if I go out right now, I film 5 tricks on a skateboard, you know, whatever, 3 seconds a clip. Somebody came out and filmed me. They spent their time coming out and documenting that and using their creative eye and their creativity with sound to document that. And then people just post it all day long. And so, and they can change the music. They don't have to credit anybody. They're supposed to. Obviously, it's already covered by copyright and trademark laws. Those elements are. But it doesn't stop people doing it. And I don't think it's a great thing. You know, I think it's going to tighten up a little bit more, because it's too much information. It's just that, you know.
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, like, as you say, like, it's funny, because, like, people don't even bring it up as much, but, like, skateboarding videos is another thing that was, you know, probably devastated by downloading and streaming and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I mean, those videos cost a lot more money than people think, you know, and if you look at the videos from like the late 90s, early 2000s, they were filmed all over the whole world. Skate videos before that weren't. They were, you know, the Santa Cruz videos were filmed in Southern California. Do you know what I'm saying? The Powell videos were mostly filmed in Southern California. You know, Savannah Slammer video was filmed, because it was a contest, in Georgia, in one place, over the course of probably a week or less. And so our videos, the first videos from the generation that I kind of really grew up in, or after I'd moved to the US and was actively, permanently 24/7 skating, living in an apartment with however many people were in there. We had tricks everywhere in the whole world. And the idea was, let's make the best videos we possibly can. I don't care where we need to go. If we can get somebody to pay for it, or we can pay for it, we'll just go and do it. That was the mentality in those early flip videos and zero videos and Baker videos. It really was. And same with the music. It was we're going to choose all of our own music for our parts. No one's going to choose that. Some guy that doesn't skate is not going to choose the music that I'm going to have over me riding my board. And it's easy to say, but if you actually think about it and look back, it wasn't like that before that 90s. Early 2000s generation that I grew up in, the Tony Hawk Pro Skater period. Like, guys, videos before that, like big skate videos, guys didn't choose their own music. It didn't happen. And so That was important to me and a lot of other guys that are of my age. And you know, I hope that that's as important to some of the younger dudes now, you know. But they've got to care. It's that they're, you know, you're in charge of your own destiny to a large extent. So, you know, that's the way I do it. Like, no one will ever choose music for any of my video parts because there's a lot of, like, you know, blood, sweat, and tears in those videos. And I love it and I enjoy doing it. And I want people to get an experience, feel that energy while we're out skating and have the music be in sync with the skate. And you know, who knows your music that you like better than yourself, you know?
Absolutely.
So if you can find something that moves with your rhythm and so, you know, if you look at a lot of the videos, the music that I've had, it's generally been fairly similar stuff, you know, over time. There's always that energy drive to it, or it doesn't make me want to skate and I want to watch something that makes me want to skate.
Well, this would be a point for another day, but yeah, Tony Hawk, yeah. Pro Skater, we could go into, because that is another thing that a ton of people that have been on the show, that's what introduced them to punk.
Yeah.
You know, like
crazy.
A whole other generation of kids getting into it through
that. Motorhead can thank me for that. I got them in that one.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you for that. Because a lot of, I think maybe it would be a different generation of musicians even more today than without that. Thank you so much, Jeff, for taking the time to talk to me, man.
Yeah, you're welcome, and you know, hopefully I'll get to see you around soon. Hopefully I get to see you play soon.
Absolutely, man. Thank you, Jeff, for coming on the show, and Jeff will hopefully be by for a part two, or, you know, he and I are talking about doing some music, so who knows? Who knows? We got plans. We got plans in the future. Speaking of the future, next week on the show, this is one that was kind of a birthday gift for myself. Today's my birthday. Full disclosure, I'm doing this on my birthday. And, there's a birthday gift for myself, birthday gift for you, because next week on the show, someone who's been talked about numerous times on this show, many, many times, her name has come up. She is one of one of the most important guitar players in the city of Toronto. Next week on the show, Allison Baker of Teen Crud Combo, now of San Francisco's Dirty Ghosts. She is someone who has incredible stories. I'm telling you, next week on the show, you will hear one of, if not the greatest first punk show going to experiences ever told on this show. This is something I promise you. That is next week on the show. Allison Baker is here. Finally, I feel like this was like one of the ones. She's one of the first people I had on my list of people I wanted to interview for this show because she is that important to this city. So that is next week on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. See you over on Footnotes. We'll have a lot to talk about, I'm sure, on Footnotes. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast and write a review and rate it if you enjoy it. You can also hit me up on social media, at Left for Damien. That's it. Turn Out a Punk Facebook, Turn Out a Punk Tumblr. That's it. I will see you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye.